Welcome back, John Papa and Dan Wallin, and we're going to talk about Lab 7, which is about WCF services, right?
That's correct.
So we're going to build an application in this particular one where we're going to create WCF services, we're going to hit those WCF services from a Silverlight app, and then we've already learned at this point all the data binding tricks and the UI. After this lab, we're going to use the same application in a future lab to do RIA services. So we'll see both how to do WCF services as well as with RIA services, correct?
That's right. That's right.
So let's start by showing, you know, one way with WCF services, and we'll talk about the pros and cons of that.
So what we're going to do is, as John mentioned, we're going to build out a fairly simple user interface because the focus here is on the back end, on WCF, and how we can actually call that from Silverlight. So we're going to go ahead and create a navigation application. So we'll go to New Project. And in the lab exercise, you'll select this navigation app, and we're going to call this Using WCF Services.
Very bold. File New Project.
Yeah, we're going to go from scratch. So we'll go ahead and add that guy in. So this will do the standard prompt that if you've created a regular Silverlight app, you know, you'll get. We're going to have our host project here, target Silverlight 4. We're not going to enable that checkbox because, as you said, we're going to focus on WCF. So we'll go ahead and hit OK. But in the next lab, we'll kind of do some of that stuff.
Step by step.
All right, so this will create our two projects. And the first thing I'm going to do is we could, and we actually showed this in the ASP.NET and the Windows Forms labs, we could actually go in and create just a regular old WCF service. Exchange regular SOAP messages, stuff like that. But the challenge there is, number one, can we get better performance? And yes, we can with Silverlight. So we're going to go in and let me just real quick add a services folder. And in the services folder, so we'll do add new folder here. And we'll call this services. And I'm also going to add a models folder. And we're going to go ahead and grab, I have some existing files that we're going to grab into here. Because what we're going to do is make a database call and kind of go that route, which I'll add the database in as well. So we're going to do add existing item. And in the lab exercise, we have an area you'll go where you'll actually grab this code. And it's going to be a repository layer. And so let me go ahead and grab that. You'll see several classes in here.
The repository is basically just code. It's a couple classes that's going to read information from your database and save the information.
Exactly. And we'll come right back to them and kind of walk through. The other thing I'm going to do is we need to get a database going. So we have an existing database. And you'll also add this in the lab exercise. So we'll do the app data folder. And we'll go over to the same spot I just was. So let's add existing item. And we'll come back up and add this AdventureWorks Lite database here.
Okay.
All right, so the next thing we're going to do is, if we have a repository, this repository relies on an ORM, Object Relational Modeler. And so we're going to go in and add into this an Entity Framework 4 model. So we'll go ahead and say add a new item.
And we could certainly use in Hibernate or POCO or anything else you want.
Absolutely.
It really doesn't matter in this case. The repository code is going to hit, in this case, the Entity Framework, but we could change that code to hit whatever we want.
So we're going to call that AdventureWorks LT.edmx.
Okay.
This will pop up the database, hopefully, here. We're going to generate it from it. And there we go. So there's our AdventureWorks database.
It sees that because it's in the app data folder.
Exactly. Otherwise, if you haven't done this before, you can hit New Connection and wire it up to whatever you want. We'll hit Next. And this will take a sec to query the database, and we'll see some tables, and you can pull from the tables, the views, the stored procedures, all this stuff here. So we'll just come in, and we're just going to do customer and sales order header are the two I'm interested in this particular case.
Okay.
So we'll go ahead and click finish there, and that'll generate our simple kind of two object entity model. And we should see that screen come up momentarily here. There we go. All right, so we're going to end up binding. We're going to show some customers and show some orders and stuff like that, and then be able to edit these orders using WCF and Silverlight. So now that we have that going, let's go back to what I added earlier. Let's go back into our models here. And so you'll notice I have a customer repository, and it just has a really simple interface, get customers.
So the only thing it does right now is get customers.
That is it. And you'll notice it's in this models namespace. We're going to be using that in just a bit. And then it calls into a data context. Now, where's that coming from? Well, you can see, and that's why I named it strategically, AdventureWorks LT. That's already resolved. When I created my entity model, what I'm doing is saying this little class here is responsible for knowing some of the base types of gets and inserts, updates, deletes, things like that. It does all the heavy lifting. And so we're going to have that class know about our entity model and query it.
So repository base implements of T is basically going to take that type and turn that into the data context for you, which is used down here.
Exactly.
So it doesn't matter which type it is then in this case. You're just telling it which type.
That's right. Exactly. So we're going to do a pretty simple little link query here. Do a little join between customers and sales order headers. And we'll kind of go from there.
All right.
So that's why we added those two objects. All right, so the other one we have, we're going to use that in just a moment. But we also have a sales order header repository. And you'll see, again, it just has an interface, allows us to get an update. And then we have the implementation of the interface. Again, it inherits from our repository base, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's the actual what we want to do. So we're going to get some data, and we're going to call the update method, which is in our repository base. So as people go through the labs, it'll have them walk through those classes and spend a little bit more time.
So it not only shows you how to WCF, but it shows you how to, if you're not using Reuse Services, one of the reasons we're doing this is if you're not using Reuse Services, you have to implement these methods in your own way.
Exactly.
So working with WCF is a little more work to do that, but you have full customization and control over how you do it.
Right.
And the repository pattern is a very common pattern.
Yeah, and in essence, if I summed it up, it would be I simply want to move my data access code out of my service into a reusable class.
Right. And that's... Entity Framework shouldn't be doing it, and WCF shouldn't be doing it. Somebody has to do that.
Somebody's got to do it.
Repository.
So that's my guy that does it right
there.
Some
people call manager classes, too.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. So, and there's a lot of different ways to write these, but the goal is we want to make it so our code is kind of modularized here. So, okay. So that's kind of the back end, first part of the lab exercise that people will go through and
We're 8 minutes in. We haven't created a service yet.
No, that's next up.
This is all about services. Come on, man.
Patience. So I'm going to right-click on services, and we're going to do add new item.
Okay.
And I could go in, and we could go in and add a WCF service, and that would work. Mm-hmm. But I mentioned earlier, you want the best performance you can get.
Right.
So fortunately, with WCF and Silverlight, we have the opportunity to do binary message encoding, as you know. And that's what we're going to do. So we're going to come into the Silverlight area, and you'll see this handy-dandy Silverlight-enabled WCF service. And so we'll come into this, and I'm just going to call it customer service. You can call it whatever officially the lab has you do it. I think it's something like that, but
okay.
We'll
customer
go with customer service. SVC. Now, if you've done WCF before, then this looks pretty familiar. What you're going to see, though, is this is going to enhance the bindings for our endpoints.
So they'll use the binary encoding endpoint for us. It'll also add a little bit of contract information for us.
And it kind of makes it, to me, it's like the old ASMX. You know how easy those were? You just decorate it with web method. And that's kind of what this looks like. Very easy to use. So we'll go ahead and hit add. And there we go. So they even put in a nice little kind of Hello World example. Do work. So now what we're going to do, though, is we have our service and our class. We obviously don't want do work. I have some specific names, such as we're going to do get customers. It's going to be one of them.
Right.
Which will return a list of customer, and we'll have to resolve those. So let me get that in. Let's resolve that and get in our list.
Yep. And that just sticks to using statements up top, so we're good there.
Exactly. And I'm going to do the same type of thing. In fact, just in the interest of not having to type everything, let's go ahead and we'll make get orders by customer ID. And that's going to take an int, which will be the cust ID.
Okay. Is that returning a list of customers?
And that's actually going to return a list of sales order header.
Okay.
on that guy. And then the final one we're going to add, and we'll fill in the code here in just a bit, is an update sales order header.
The nice thing about abstracting this away from the repository layer is this guy doesn't have to think about how to get the data. He just says, somebody knows how to get the data. My job is to serve it up through the internet or the network.
Exactly.
That's my role. Repository layer in this case, his role or her role is to actually go figure out how to get the data.
Exactly. Yep. So this will be our order. And you'll notice we're going to return an operation status. Now, I didn't officially mention that one, but that is in the code that'll be, you'll add in the lab. It'll tell you where to go.
Nice when it has like error information or results
That's
information.
That's all it is. It just has, did it work? Was there an error? How many records were affected? All that type of stuff. It's
sure.
just a, it's a little class I use actually in real life type projects to return more information. All right, so we have our get customers, our get orders by customer ID, and our update. So where are we going to get the code? Well, I certainly could go in and add all the code myself, but that's the whole reason, you know, otherwise I wasted our time doing the repository stuff.
Sure.
So we're going to come up top, and we're just going to, in this example, we have an iCustomers repository, and we'll just call that, as it is, customer repository, and we'll create a new customer repository. Now, in this example, I'm going to go ahead and put the type right there on the end, but we could absolutely do, you know, injection of that type to make it dynamic.
Injection, you could use MEF, yeah. That's why I have an interface.
That's why I have an interface, but we're not going to really leverage it a whole lot. And then we have an let me see, what's my other repository? It is a sales order header. So we have an iSales order header repository, and we'll just call this order repository.
Yep, for brevity.
And yeah, that one is well named, isn't it?
Yep. And let's use the concrete instance again. Again, we could use MEF, we could use DI, that's fine.
Yep. All right. Now it's nice because now we're down to one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
Because to get the customers, I can now say, hey, take my customer repository and call get customers on it. Done. The beauty of reuse because.
And return it, right?
Were I using this in the repository in a web app or. Yep. Yeah, oh yeah, that minor detail. I just seen if you're paying attention, John.
Thank you.
You were.
I only know that because I do that a lot.
The beauty here is now if we wanted to use the repository classes directly, like in a web app or Windows Form or whatever app we could, or we can use in the service and we get good reuse.
Or even if another service has to reuse the repository methods in this, from the same WCF service.
Exactly. Exactly. So what did I call this guy? Order repository?
He was a sales order.
Yeah,
I don't know. Scroll up.
That guy right
yep, order repository.
There, so. Order repository dot, and we want, you'll notice I kind of strategically name them the same so that we know they map up, but you don't have to. And this takes a customer ID, which fortunately I have. And finally, we'll now go in and do pretty much the same thing here, but we'll call update. You'll notice this one actually takes a sales order header object,
right,
which we're going to pass up from Silverlight eventually. So I think I called that order. And there we go.
That's it. So we have a WCF service, which also talks to a repository, which talks to any framework ORM, which talks to our SQL Server database.
Exactly. So yeah, kind of three key pieces there, from the service all the way up to the database. All right, so that, at this point, could be used for virtually anything. However, not necessarily, and let me explain why. If we come in, what I want to show is, we mentioned earlier that when we talked about creating the WCF-enabled, Silverlight-enabled WCF service, that we had some special stuff that went on. And here's really the special sauce, if you will. If we were doing a normal WCF service, you get SOAP messages. In this case, because we did the Silverlight-enabled, we get this nice binary messaging coding over HTTP.
Right.
Which, as you know, adds very, very good performance. And if you're, whether it's small amounts of data or large amounts of data, it provides a great way to exchange it very efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
When we go to the Silverlight side to actually consume this service, we'll have the similar thing you'll see when we make the proxy.
Right.
So that's all kind of done for us. And that's why a Silverlight-enabled service, if it's just for Silverlight, is nice. Obviously, this service is not designed for maybe jQuery to call it. jQuery is not going to handle binary, but works great for performance for Silverlight. So let's go ahead. At this point, that is our back-end project. and we're kind of ready to go. So that's what exercise one,
right?
Gets us through. So let's go ahead and try to find any typos here. We'll do a quick build. The good news is everything is green. I don't see any red.
Green's good. Orange is okay too.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so it looks like we built, and then I usually like to right-click on that SVC, and we'll do view in browser just to make sure it comes up.
You got
up.
Me into that habit. It's good to check.
And there we go.
So not only did the project build, but you were able to talk to the service through Cassini.
There you go. Very nice. Don't even have to leave Visual Studio. Don't even have to have IIS for development purposes.
So that should wrap up exercise one, right?
That is exercise one.
Okay, so we're going to continue on with exercise two now, which is to build upon this and call the service.
That's right. So now what we're going to do is we have a service, and if you did any of the exercises on Windows Forms or ASP.NET, you've already seen this next part, but we'll go ahead and add in our proxy. And so we're going to just simply right-click and say Add Service Reference. And that's why I want to make sure my service is up and running. And usually when you hit Discover, it starts it for you. But
right.
I don't know, creature.
But it should be quick and instantaneous now.
It should be. So we'll hit Discover because it's in the same project. And you can see it was instantaneous.
Yep. And then it gets, using the WSDL, it checks what the interfaces are.
And there we go. So now we have, there's our interface, as you said. And I'm going to call this Web Service Proxies. All right. And that's going to be my namespace of the proxy class. And although this is pointed out in some other videos, in case somebody's jumping right to this one, you'll notice that everything is asynchronous,
right,
and that any lists, like that list of customer I'm returning, are observable collection. So we'll just leave those defaults. Web Service Proxies. Let me go ahead and copy that so I can remember it. And we'll hit OK.
So this will generate the class for the proxies and also any models that were exposed by WCF.
Exactly.
In this case, customer and sales order header.
All right, so there we go. There's our proxy. So now we're kind of WCF enabled, and you'll even notice that if I open this service-references.client-config here.
That's where our binary encoding endpoints are defined.
You'll notice it's apples to apples. Matches up exactly what was on the server, which is a must. We're done with the service. All right, so from here, in exercise two, you're going to go in and add a combo box and some other things. So I'm going to drag them on real quick to get the appropriate assemblies.
Right, we don't want to watch you drag UI, so let's
just then we're going to cut and paste in what you'll do in the lab. In the lab, you're going to create some data grid columns.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to customize some events on the data form control. And incidentally, I want to mention, if you're going to use the data form control, of course, you'll want to make sure you install the Silverlight toolkit.
The toolkit, right, which is free.
The instructions are in the lab on how to do that. So what we'll do here is, this is a navigation project. So we have our views. And then mainpage.xaml is the overall big screen.
That's our shell.
Yep. It's our shell. And then these guys here, about and home, will be loaded into those.
Those are two child pages, basically.
Exactly. So yeah, you can think of main page for the ASP.NET folks is kind of like, I don't know, your master page almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of hosts all your other stuff. So we're going to come in here, and I'm just going to come into the text of this guy. And we'll show off real quick the properties grid, which is nice to have. And we'll just call this customers viewer. And then I'm going to delete this guy. And then I'm just going to, for the sake of keeping the video relatively short and not boring everybody that's watching, we're going to go ahead and run off to the toolbox and drag on to here a data form and a data grid. And the reason for that is there are some assemblies I need to know about to use.
Mm-hmm.
In order to use those, it's a lot easier just to do the following. So we also need a combo box, but I'm going to paste that one in.
And we're going to load the data grid with a list of customers?
That'll be our orders.
Orders, okay.
Actually. So yeah, this will be our orders, and then we're going to use a data form. In fact, now that data grid's on there, we can get rid of it, but we'll come down and drag on a data form control.
So we're dragging these on again just to make sure that all the appropriate assemblies that the data grid and data form need are added to the project.
That, and in the lab, you'll do the same thing.
Right.
So, yep. But my main reason is I am going to cut and paste into XAML to get this all right, but that wouldn't work on its own because
right.
I needed, as you just said, the assembly references.
So if you're going to the solution and copying XAML and you didn't actually drag these on, you're probably going to get an error because
that would be a problem.
Yep.
So, okay.
Which you could manually add, but this is easier.
So now what I'm going to do is we're going to come on in and kind of cheat here and just grab what you'll build. And again, you're going to spend a little bit of time on that part, adding some data grid rows and columns. Mm-hmm. And you can see we now have some very specific rows and columns.
Sure.
There's also, we're going to handle the selection change. So I'm going to double click on that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in the lab exercise on the data form, we can go off into the lightning bolt area for the events. And we need to know when the edit ending is happening. So we're going to come into here. And once a row has been edited, we need to handle that. And yeah, that one right there.
Okay.
And that adds our code. And now what we're going to do is, let's talk about the user interface real quick. And then we're going to fill in the code to load this by calling through the proxy down to the WCF service. So the first thing we're going to do is we need to load our customers. That's why we had to get customers in the service.
Right.
So we'll do that and we'll bind it. And all that kind of, much of that work has already been done in my XAML that you'll walk through in the lab. Then the data grid is going to be bound into the sales order header collection.
Mm-hmm.
As a customer selected, we then want to go load that customer's orders. As they click on an order, we want to load that order details down into the data form.
Right.
So this provides a great way to do, the data grid obviously provides a great way to show a collection of items. The data form is very good for kind of single item.
And you could edit right in the data grid, but data form is much more user friendly in this case.
Especially when this one has a whole bunch of properties.
Yeah.
And you know that can get pretty wide.
You just want to show those four main columns and be done with it.
Exactly. So what we're going to do is, I have some code snippets for this one. So in the lab exercise, folks will go in and add in some specific codes. We're going to run off. Let me just pin this guy real quick.
And if you're not familiar with the iNavigator 2, it's almost like the loaded event in the case for a navigation framework.
Yeah, this, in fact, I don't really use loaded anymore when it's a navigation framework for that very reason, because right. This is your cue that everything's ready to go.
This is when the page has come into view, it's been navigated to from wherever.
Exactly. So on the iNavigator 2, just have a little bit of code in here. And this is going to go in. I need to create this guy right here. And actually, I put in the wrong one, I just realized. I needed to go with this on Navigated 2.
Ah, yes.
All right. And that's why I'm not going to type it all. But we do need a proxy. So if you recall earlier, we had a customer's service.
Customer service, yeah.
So we should have something like a customer service client somewhere in here. So let's see if we can resolve that. And there it is, and you'll notice that namespace is, that's why I called it web service proxy, so I can kind of remember
right.
You know, what we're using. But that's the guy that's right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a proxy. So we're going to now use the proxy to go in and make this call. So we're going to call it really obvious name of proxy.
Which is convenient since your snippets referred it like that.
Maybe a little strategic. And all right, let's walk through, let's go full screen real quick so we can see this a little better. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to wire up our callbacks to specific handlers. Now,
for
in this case, I'm using
handlers,
lambdas.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I'm doing that here and maybe not down in some of these other events is, you know, how often does selection change get called? Well, every time a customer is selected. Mm-hmm. If I keep wiring them up, it's going to call it multiple times
right.
On the callback.
And then you'd have to wire it up, and you'd also have to take away the reference for the event.
And then you'd have to remove it.
Yep.
And so we're just going to wire it up once. We're going to have one single proxy, which is a little different than we did, remember, in the earlier lab on Windows Forms and ASP.NET.
We created it inside of each method.
We create a new proxy every time. This time we're going to reuse the proxy. We're going to wire up the callbacks. And so you can see on the get customers completed, we're simply going to do a lambda and say, here's my anonymous method,
mm-hmm.
and assign to that combo box the what'll be the observable collection you can see there
right.
of customer. And that'll bind it. Same thing for the orders. We're going to grab the orders and bind it to the data grid. And then when we update something, we want to handle that as well. But this time we're going to do a little message box when the update occurs.
Right.
A lot of stuff we could do that's really cool with Silverlight there, animations, child windows.
And it's important to say those completed handlers don't actually do anything until you actually call something like the get customers async.
Exactly. This is just saying what to do once you get the data.
Right.
Exactly. So the last thing we're going to do in the non-navigated is when this loads, we need to fill the combo box
mm-hmm.
with our customers. So we're going to go ahead and fill that combo box. Then, when they select one, we need to be able to fill the data grid.
Right.
Now, we don't have, though, the sales order data, the order date, ship method, everything that you see there. It's not available right now, so we're actually going to make another call to the service to go get it. Mm-hmm. Now, there are ways we could load all the sales orders for each customer, but you can imagine how big that could get if you have a lot of customers.
Sure.
So that's why we're just going to load the customers, and then when you select a customer, we'll get the orders. All right, so let's go into here, and just three or four lines of code that I'm going to add here. And I'm just going to pop that on from my snippet. So in the selection changed, we're going to go ahead and put, actually it's two lines of code, not too bad. So you can see, very simple, we're going to grab the customer's combo box, selected item, cast that to a customer. That's what we have right here. And then ultimately what we want is, in order to get the orders, we need the customer ID.
Right.
So we're going to grab that customer ID out of the combo box. Then we're going to go ahead and pass it up to the operation on the WCF service that you already saw. So that's kind of that guy. And then likewise, when they edit the data form and they click the OK button, say done, we need to commit that to the ultimately the database.
Right.
So we're going to go ahead and edit ended. We'll drag on a little bit of code, and we need to check, though, to make sure they wanted to commit, because in exercise three...
canceled or...
Exactly.
Right.
How do you know? Now, when we run this, you're going to see that the cancel doesn't even work, which is why we have an exercise three.
Exactly.
You know, got to keep the viewers interested here, so it's like a movie.
So if they commit, we're going to grab the current item, which is the order in this case. We'll cast it, I assume. Yep. And then we'll pass it down to the asynchronous method.
That's exactly what we're going to do. Yep. And so that's kind of the, let me go ahead and make some more room there again. That's kind of all we're going to do is get the customers. That is handled here. Get the orders based on the customer ID. That's handled here. And then once they edit an order, we need to update it.
Okay, and up here, I saw where we loaded the combo box. I saw where we loaded the data grid. Those were in both these completed handlers.
Yep.
Where did we load the data form?
Well, the data form itself, there's a binding. So let's actually show that.
Great.
Excellent observation. All right, the data form has a current item property, and so this is already kind of wired up. But let's go into the properties, and let's go up to current item, and where's he at? There he is. So this is actually using element-to-element binding. And so what we're doing is, you can see here, the source of our binding is orders data grid, which is, of course, this guy.
So he's saying basically anything the guy above me has, whatever the selected item is...
I want it.
Selected item. Yep, selected item.
I want it. And that selected item is then what's bound to the data form. Now, in this case, we're going to kind of auto-generate all the fields, if you will,
right,
for the data form.
The data form will create all that for you.
Which, it's mentioned in the lab that in a real-life app, obviously you'd want to limit the properties you don't need. But, you know, to keep this reasonable to get through, that's what we're going to do here. So, yeah, so that's, let's open up the XAML all the way. There's a couple other things in the exercise that you'll walk through and do. We're also going to enable the different command buttons that are available. That'll be edited. Here is the current item binding. You can see we bind to that orders data grid right there.
Right.
There's a few other things like auto commit, auto edit that you'll set in the lab exercise, but that'll be in the documentation. All right, so that's kind of how it's all wired together. So we get the customers, we bind it to, we then get the orders based on the customer ID. As you just pointed out, the data form is then linked, if you will, to the data grid through element-to-element binding, which is an awesome feature when you need it. And that's kind of how that piece works.
So this guy should run and load at this point.
Should run and load at this point.
And he should allow you to save as well, because we wired in the data form's commit button.
Everything should be all kind of set. But you're going to see, assuming it runs and loads, since we're all doing this on the fly.
Yes.
The cancel button should be grayed out, and we're going to explain why that is and how to fix it. All right, so let's go ahead, and since we did build successfully, that's always the first step. Okay, I always like, this is already going, we're good, but I always like to make sure that when I'm in dev mode, is my service going? Looks
right.
Like it is.
It can see it.
Okay, now in this case, though, I didn't really have to do that because the service and the WC or the Silverlight test pages are in the same project.
Mm-hmm.
So we have no cross-domain issues. Everything's being, the ZAP is served from the same place as the service, so we're good. So we'll just go ahead and try to run it.
And if they weren't separate websites, you'd want to use a cross-domain policy file, which is the client access policy to XML that you explained in a previous lab.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, both the Windows forms and the ASP.NET.
Labs 1 and 2.
We'll go into that. That's correct. So let's see if we have anything. Oh, good, we do. That's always nice. So now when we select this, the selection changed event will fire that we just looked at. That grabs the customer ID. That should make another call out, and there we go. And most of these only have one order in them.
You know, I often get questions about when you grab that drop-down list, how come you don't just bind right to what the list below it? The reason you don't is because you don't know which orders you're going to get yet. Because we're getting the orders on the fly.
Exactly. Because if, as we were talking about earlier, if we grabbed all the customers and the orders, and these are fairly simple in this database, they only pretty much one-to-one. But, you know, one customer, if it's a big customer, maybe has 50.
Sure.
If you load all those up front, yeah, you could do that, but you might take a really big hit when it loads.
Yeah, it's not recommended, yeah.
So you got to be careful.
Now, the data form is empty because you haven't yet
selected it. So let's click on it. And there we go. Our data form is now enabled. Now you'll notice everything is shown here. And some of this stuff really like customer. It's showing an object. Okay, this is where we'd go in and we'd want to customize the fields. And,
right.
But we did the auto-generate to keep it fairly straightforward.
Don't show certain ones. You can change the display members with the attributes. All this is customizable. It doesn't look like this out.
Exactly.
Unless you just run it out of the box like we did.
Right. So we're going to click on the little edit icon here. And when we click on that, we switch into edit mode. But you'll notice I can't cancel. So we're going to deal with that next. That's actually really simple once you know the trick. There's an interface we need to worry about. But what we can do is we can come in, for instance, this is my comment.
And it's also got validation and whatnot in here, too. So if you remove a field that's required or put a wrong data type in, it'll tell you.
Do all that type of stuff.
No exceptions.
In the WCF RIA Services Lab, we'll even demonstrate how to use data annotations
to
do some of that. So we'll go ahead and hit OK. That calls the end edit. Looks like it succeeded. Did it really succeed? Well, remind me, we had Brigid.
Yep.
Let's go back and see if I can even find
couldn't
that.
Couldn't have picked Mike or Dan.
I don't even know what I picked. There it is. And we'll click on it, and there we go.
This is my comment.
Our comments in there. So that is the end of exercise 2 at this point.
So in this exercise, we created our service, which we can wire up to Silverlight. In this exercise 2, we're now using and consuming that service, and we simply drag the UI on, which is a lot of effort, take you longer than it took Dan.
Yes.
And now the next step we're going to do is figure out how do you deal with more complex scenarios such as making it editable, knowing if the cancel button should be enabled or not.
Exactly.
That's exercise 3.
And that's the next one.
So we'll start that right now.
All right. Well, let's jump in. So exercise 3. What we want, the whole goal here of this exercise is we want to come in and when they, you know, if they want to cancel, we want to be able to cancel.
Now, so should be smart enough to know that something's happened.
You got to know. And the problem is, what if they type something? How do you know to go back to the original values?
Right.
That can be
so you
got to
track state.
Exactly. So there's a little more code with this one. And fortunately, I have some pre-done snippets we'll drag on.
You're always prepared.
Oh, you know, we try to be. But
like a Boy Scout. Got your Swiss Army knife. You got your MacGyver fly swatter and chewing
code
gum.
Snippet.
And now you got your code snippets.
That's all you need. You can get through life with anything on that. So let's go ahead and we'll shut down this guy. And so the goal is, you know, customers, fine. We're not editing customers. We are editing, if we look back at the service, let's go back into here and we'll do view code. You'll notice the update is being made to the sales order header object. So somehow we need to make it so that type on the client side can be cancelable. Is that a word?
Sure.
It is now. We just coined it. All right. So to do this, we need to go in, and we already have a sales order header object inside of our proxy.
Right.
We need to make another class, a partial class, so that we can add some new functionality, implement an ieditable object interface, and then kind of make it so the compiler automatically works with that.
And the whole point of this is to take that class and make it so we can tell if something's happened to it.
Exactly.
Have there been changes?
Have there been changes, and if so, can we roll those changes back?
And these things have been thought about. I mean, there's interfaces to help you with this, which is what you just mentioned.
Right. So we're going to go in, and we could add it into, usually I make like a model folder or something, but we'll go ahead and just add it right into the project. We'll add a new class, and the name should be sales order header.
I'll take your word.
We're going to see if that's right anyway. And then the namespace of the class will need to match up with the namespace of the proxy. So,
right.
Because we're going to do a partial. So let's add that in. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and number one, I might still have that in my clipboard. Nope, I don't. So we're going to do using dot in, what was it? Web service proxies? Yeah. Web service proxies. Now you'll notice we get a red line because it says, hey, duplicate definition.
Which
a good sign.
It's a good sign because it tells you you've got the right namespace.
That's right.
There's two classes named this.
It's saying, hey, you can't do that. You know, we're going to have a conflict. So we fix that, of course.
And the stuff that's been auto-generated automatically sticks the partial keyword in there for you. So you just have to change yours.
You just change the partial. That's
code.
It. Exactly. So now all we need to do is implement an interface. Now I'm going to go ahead and just add it, and then we're going to drag in some snippets. Mm-hmm. I'm going to implement it and then kind of clear it out. Because there is a little bit of code involved here, but the good news is I've had to do this a lot on some real projects. And once you get the pattern down, it's really easy, and you can actually borrow pretty nicely from other codes.
You probably can base class some of it, too.
Yep. So we're going to do iEditable object, and that's in system component model, which should, there we go, right there. Added that for us. And then let me go ahead and we'll right-click on it. You'll do this in the lab, and we're going to say implement interface. And you'll see that the members added, let's just shrink those up real quick, are, okay, so we're going to begin edit, when they end edit, and when they cancel edit. What do we want to do?
So it puts in the ability for the screen and the controls and the data form, in this case, to understand when I press OK, cancel, when I'm beginning and ending the edits, this is what's going to happen.
Exactly.
But it does not implement how it's going to work.
We have to do all that work. In fact,
right.
We're even going to have to do a little bit of cloning of the appropriate properties we want to track. Now, I'm only going to do like two.
Sure.
But if you had 50 properties, you'd have to track all 50 properties, in essence. But it's not too bad. So I'm going to go ahead and just drag on some snippets here to save us a little bit of time on the code. I know John likes to see me do it on the fly and prove I can do it, but we're going to pretend I can. So
we'll let you go today.
All right. So here's our begin edit. And you'll notice right off the bat, though, up top within the class, I have this, what's my original object? Because you need to track that, because if they cancel, what do you want to do?
Just like the data set has the original and the current values, you're basically creating that original value.
Exactly. So when we come in, we're going to say if we're not editing, so we're starting an edit, because if we are editing, we already have done some things. We don't want to mess with this. So if we're not editing, we'll update that variable a little later. We're going to say, okay, now we are editing, and we want to assign a clone, which is just a shallow copy of just the basic properties, and it won't go deep into complex type properties.
Okay.
Strings, ints, it'll do that fine.
All the scalars, okay.
Yep, all the scalars. Then we would go in and we'll go ahead and set the sales order header here for our clone, and that's going to add it up into our sales order header up top. So that's kind of the first step. Track what the original object is.
Okay.
And that's just not a lot we had to do there other than cast memorize clone, because that gives us an object.
Right, just gives you an object. You want the same exact type. So.
Exactly. So the next thing we're going to do is, remember there's three members, so we have a cancel edit. So let's go ahead and just put that right there. Now, if they're canceling, we need to first say, well, we're the editing, because if they're not editing, there's not much to do.
Right.
So we're now going to say update the properties, and I'm only tracking two of them in this case, you'll see in the final step here. But now we want to go to that original object that we saved up top, and we want to go ahead and say, grab what the original comment and ship date were, and assign those to my current object.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can kind of roll back, if you will. And that makes it really nice. And then we're going to say, okay, now we're done editing. They canceled. So this is the challenge here, is this is where I say you might have to write a little code. If you have 50 properties, you're going to have to do the mapping from here to here. I actually end up doing, in a real-life app, a little reflection thing to just auto-map it with like one or two lines of code.
Right, an auto-mapper.
Make it easy. But you could write it like this if you want. Then the final piece is, so we begin edit, we cancel edit, we have one more little guy I'll drag on here, which is our end.
And the save is, the end is much easier.
And in this, the bulk of the work in this example is really in the cancel.
It's in the cancel, yeah.
Yeah. So in the end edit, again, we're going to check, are we editing? If we are, we're done. We're now ending.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't have an original object. It's null. So we're going to. Right.
It's important to note this doesn't save the object, this interface.
No.
It just shows how to deal with change tracking.
Exactly. It just makes it literally so the data form, because it's iEditable Object Aware, mm-hmm. it makes it so the data form can actually know that if you cancel, that here's what we roll the values back to.
Right.
In the data form interface. So, all right, and that's it. That's pretty much exercise three.
Okay.
So now let's try it. And now, because as I mentioned, data form is iEditable Object Aware, so it should automatically allow us to now cancel. That'll light up. We don't even have to write any code.
So all that to make a button enable.
Yeah, but it's worth it because you get the rollback, you know, the rollback
piece. Right. Again, it's not just enabling the button. It's knowing if the data is dirty or not.
Exactly. So let's view in browser. We'll load this guy back up.
Okay.
And let's pick. We'll go with Catherine here. All right, so there's my data. Now let's click edit.
Click the pencil.
Oh, look at that. Cancel is now lit up. Mm-hmm. Okay is not, because we haven't changed anything. It detect,
right.
You know, iNotify property changed is monitored also. So this object looks at a lot of interfaces, but we can just cancel. We could also come in and let's just type a comment. You know, this is my second comment. And we can say okay, or, you know, and that would save it though at this point. Or we could cancel, look what the comment rolled back to. It's, you know, back to what
it
originally was.
It doesn't just wipe it out, it actually reverts to the old value, which is why you have to put in each property, as you were mentioning, because right now you only did two properties.
I only did two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, in essence, what's happening is when you click on this guy, the begin edit is running. Mm-hmm. Now we're in begin edit. If we hit cancel, cancel edit is called. If I did make a change and hit OK, end edit gets called. And that's kind of how that works.
And if you didn't use a data form, you could still do all this. You could create all your fields yourself. You could still wire in and do the data binding the way we were doing it. Just bind it to a panel, for example, like a grid or a stack panel.
Wouldn't even need that.
Use. And then for the change, the OK, and the save buttons, you could still use the same interfaces, and you could wire in the buttons to check the states.
Exactly.
So.
And just while we're on it, iEditable Object, it's not just for data form. I've used it for data grids as well.
Right.
So it's a good interface when you have a little more involved data where you want the user to be able to kind of go back to previous states.
Sure. Anytime you're editing data like that, you want to be able to revert.
Right. Right. So that's a wrap on kind of the lab exercise, and then there's a bonus I'll just mention where I'll let people walk through it because you don't do any code, but it uses a tool called Fiddler, along with a free plugin called the Binary Message Encoder Inspector, I think.
Which you need
name.
So it can actually look at the binary data in a human-readable form.
Exactly. So that is in the lab exercise for those that are interested. I would highly recommend people, as you know, as you've used a lot too, get good at that, because sometimes you want to see the data that's exchanged. If you debug,
it's very helpful to look at Fiddler, as opposed to guessing, why did I get an error?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
This is good. So exercise 1, 2, 3, we basically created our services, we consumed our services, and then we allowed to editing and change tracking as well.
That's
and
then,
of course, the Fiddler topic is the optional one.
That's right.
Well, it was a longer exercise, but I think it was all good, valuable information. And stick around for the next lab, because that's going to get into doing similar, actually the same visual project,
same
functionality, but we're going to do it in a different way using Rhea services and show you some of the pros and cons between the two topics.